Welcome to another episode of It's a Long Road, the Ramble Series podcast. I am your host, and with me today, I have a very special guest, Walter Beneziak. Did I get your last name right?
Beneziak, yeah, you Beneziak. Got it pretty much.
Pretty much, okay.
I've heard so much worse. I've heard it all, believe me.
Well, and I've heard your name numerous times. Actually, literally, just moments before this recording, I went to your YouTube channel and like got a couple of your clips, like having you pronounce your name. Anyways, ask my wife. I pronounce things wrong all the time, so, but okay.
No problem.
Walter, this is exciting. So tell me a little bit about, well, actually, that's a terrible way to intro, because you are like a legit YouTube creator, okay? So I appreciate you coming on the show, and more importantly, or humbly, I should say, you actually listened to my podcast, which I thank you. I mean, it's really kind of you to even listen to me. So
I first heard you on, obviously the Going the Distance, because I'm a huge Rocky fan. I think I did a video with my coworker Tamara. She had a series called Tamara's Never Seen. She grew up not seeing like all these huge movies, so one of them was Rocky.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to be on that episode. So I joined her for that episode. And we shared it out on Twitter and stuff. And I think you contacted her on there and were trying to get her to listen to the podcast or something. I was like, well, I'm a Rocky fan. Like, let me listen to
that. Right. I forgot. That is crazy. Isn't that weird? Okay. I remember that. This was like the early days of, this is sort of like before people were doing reaction videos to like movies and stuff. This was kind of like you were like an early adapter of that. That's right. I forgot that was you guys.
She's still doing everything for the channel. I mean, she does a lot of different stuff. She mostly streams on our Twitch channel, the Channel Awesome Twitch channel. And she's also in Nostalgia Critic, which that's like the big flagship of our channel. So she's a main character on there, plays a whole bunch of different roles in the skits that my coworker Doug creates for her and everything. So she's still very active in the community.
Can you explain everything you're a part of, essentially? I mean, you go to your website and then you're like, you're on this and you're on that, and you have like Fanscription and Awesome Channel, and tell the listeners what it is you create for YouTube.
Okay. So, I got involved with Channel Awesome, I think about 2016. Channel Awesome, it used to be like a conglomerate of creators, but now it's just more focused on just like our in-house people. Doug Walker, who is the Nostalgia Critic, a lot of people know who he is in like the nerd quote unquote community. He reviews movies from like when he was growing up as this character who is like very loud and like overdoes everything, basically. He got popular in like, I want to say like the late 2000s, early 2010s is when he kind of blew up. So he's been doing it for a long time. And that kind of started the ball rolling on the Channel Awesome channel. I got involved some years later, like I said, 2016, to do a show called Awesome Comics, which at the time was on our YouTube channel, where we would review movies or talk about like the current news topics in the comic movie kind of community. So that was really fun. I moved on to do a show called Top 5 for the Channel Awesome, where I just counted down things. My first two videos were actually the best and worst performances of Sylvester Stallone, so that was fun.
Awesome. Those
are really fun to put together for a while. So after that show ended, I started Fanscription, and the first episode of that was What If Apollo Creed Didn't Die in Rocky IV, so yes. You can see a theme happening. I'm still doing Fanscription. I was taking a break for earlier this year, but we're going to get back into it next month. So that's just a what-if show where it's, you know, asking a what-if question, changing a movie, and rewriting the story. And that we have, like, artists come in and do concept art for us and stuff, so it's really fun. We get to write dialogue and have our coworkers come in and do voices. But that's the main thing I'm doing right now. I also do Twilightober Zone, which is every day in October, I review an episode of The Twilight Zone, the original series. And I do Bat-May, which is every day in May, I do a review of an episode of Batman, the animated series. So I do a lot of stuff, a lot of hats that I wear at the channel, where I'm hosting, writing, editing, a lot of different stuff. I also make occasional appearances on the Nostalgia Critic show and stuff like that. So it's a lot of stuff at the same time.
Wow. Okay. So people have said, hey, Ryan, you got a lot of shows, because I do Rambo and Rocky, and I do another podcast called The Worst of the Best. And look at this guy. Do you have a job? Or is this your...
This is my job, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, there's no way you can...
No way, no. It's kind of like, this is my side hustle now. This is my full-time job.
Well, good for you. Well, good for you for making that work. Thanks. Unlike you, I don't have enough of anything, any listeners or what have you, to get the ad revenue or downloads. And this is certainly a hobby for me. I couldn't... If I had lived off my podcasting hobby, my wife would, well, she would leave me, and rightfully so, because I wouldn't be able to support the family. I gotta have a real job. So,
sure.
No, but it's good for you that you're able to make that work for you, because then you get to do what you love. What is it? If you do what you love, you never work a day in your life or whatever that is. So.
Right. I mean, I could testify that I definitely still work. It feels like work sometimes, sure, for sure. But most of the time, I mean, it's better than 99.9% of other jobs out there, you know?
Absolutely.
And getting to talk about things that I love. It's just, I think the things that are weighing heavy on me now are the month-long things, because that just takes a lot of research and a lot of time to write 31 episodes or reviews of like Batman and Twilight Zone. So I'm looking forward to winding those down over the next couple of years.
We just got something in our chat here. Donald in our chat says that Rocky IV alternate universe was excellent. Sly ended up agreeing with the headcanon later if he could have done Rocky IV again.
I know. You know, I watched his behind the scenes of the recut of Rocky IV, and he laid out my fan scripture like exactly. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, that's great. I'm sure he didn't watch my video or anything, but that's great that like that kind of idea is out there of Apollo surviving. And I still think it was a mistake to kill him, because Apollo is such a popular character, and it just felt so rushed. Like, he just turned babyface in the third movie, just turned into a good guy. And then you're going to, well, I mean, he wasn't exactly a bad guy the first two movies, but he was the antagonist. Right. So like to have him and Rocky be friends, I was so excited to see all that actually happen. And then in Rocky IV, him dying just felt like such a rush job. And as I've gotten older, I've still am so confused about that, because there's so much more you could have mined from Apollo. And how Stallone like talks about it in that video, he says that he could have been paralyzed. And what do you do with this character when you take away what he was known for and what he prides himself on, which is being an athlete, being the best at his sport? Wouldn't it be one of the greatest athletes of all time? When you take that away, who is he? And like, yeah, that's genius. Why didn't you do that? And that was kind of behind my fanscription for it. So it's too bad we never got to see that. The movie would have been better off. And, you know, the movies, Rocky V certainly probably would have been a little bit better. But
can you imagine if Apollo was there interesting. For Rocky V?
You could. I did do a fanscription about that, too, kind of incorporating Adonis Creed into it as well. I'm just trying to imagine what could have happened. But, I mean, it would have been great to have Carl Weathers in there in Rocky V.
Well, you've listened to, of course, Going the Distance. Are you listening to One More Round? Or are you going with us the One More Round as well? Or
Absolutely. Oh, wow. I only got into it, I think Rocky III you guys were covering when I started listening. Okay. And I wasn't consistently listening until you guys started covering Rocky IV. It's good to hear your thoughts and your two co-hosts as well. Like, I love your guys' banter. It's great.
Well, that's I appreciate that. And coming from you, a creator yourself, it's high praise, and I appreciate that. Well, we've mentioned, of course, your love of Rocky. Of course, look at the memorabilia behind you. You got the Rocky poster.
I got a Stallone shirt on today. I'm ready to go.
I love that shirt. I love that picture of Sly, too. Yeah, and that Rocky.
It's great.
So, yeah, let's do it. But before we get into where we are in Rambo First Blood Part 2, I got to ask you, what's your fandom of Rambo, the Rambo franchise, and what's your history with Rambo?
I grew up since I was 8 years old loving Rocky. So like I can tell you everything about like first watching Rocky and getting into all those movies and everything. Rambo, I kind of put off watching because I wasn't sure if I would be into it until I was in high school. So I think I was like 15 or 16 when I watched First Blood, and I really, really love First Blood. I think it gets better as the more times I see it. There's more things I noticed as a, like I'm kind of an amateur filmmaker too, so like I noticed little things here and there, and how it's kind of this smaller self-contained movie. I still really want to read the book, which I have not done yet, but going to eventually. So I'm a huge fan of First Blood. The sequel films 2 and 3 kind of blend together because it's like the stereotypical Rambo stuff. Like when everyone thinks of Rambo, I think they think of Rambo 2 and 3.
Of course.
You know, I saw Rambo 4 as soon as, I guess just called Rambo. It's so confusing with the names. But I saw the 2007 movie or 2008 movie.
2008, yeah.
Right. I saw that on DVD when it came out, and it was just like a gore fest the entire time, and I was like, what? What's going on?
Yeah.
And then I saw Last Blood in theaters. Was that 2 years ago now?
2018, I think, yeah. Three almost.
Yeah, and it felt like a discount Liam Neeson movie with Rambo in it, which I was let down quite a bit from Last Blood. There were some parts I really liked, but only certain scenes. It was just kind of a weird thing where he goes to Mexico and gets the living crap beat out of him for like 10 minutes. it was a weird choice, but I do like First Blood a lot. The other Rambo films, I'm kind of like, yeah, they're all right. Like 2 and 3, there's definitely stuff. I just rewatched 2 last night, and there's definitely like that 80s excess thing in it where it's everything's huge and all these giant explosions and they got real helicopters chasing each other and all that stuff. And I could really appreciate that. And there are some really creative shots in First Blood Part 2 that I really like. But I love First Blood, the original. That's kind of where my biggest part of the fandom is.
That's about as fair as an assessment you can give regarding the franchise. Saying that the other films in any way, shape, or form measure up as far as a film goes with First Blood is, you know, you can't do that. And as I've started to attack Rambo First Blood Part 2, I'm approaching it the way that the film is and the time that it is. Like, we don't, and I know you haven't done this, but we're not comparing it to First Blood. That's not the point. And then when Rambo 3 is reviewed, and then when Rambo's reviewed, and then when Rambo or Last Blood, like, we can always just easily say it's not as good as First Blood. I mean, no one wants to hear that for, you know, five seasons of podcasting. So the beauty of actually reviewing any film piece by piece, sometimes you realize, oh, there's more here than I thought there was, or there is something going on here more than just what it appears to be. And sometimes you're like, oh, there's nothing going on here. First Blood Part 2, I think it's the first one I remember knowing because it came out when I was 10 years old.
Did you see it in theaters?
No, the first one I saw in theaters was Rambo Part 3.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I was still too young. How old was I? Boy, what year did it come out? 88, I think. Rambo 3 was 88. So I was only 13. And my mom took me and my other brother, actually two of my three brothers came with me. Anyways, she took us because we were all under 17 or whatever it was. It was rated R. I mean, so funny. Okay. Isn't it funny to watch Rambo 2 and 3 and even First Blood? They're rated R, is just shy of what you see on normal NBC TV or AB. Like, it's
Part 2, there's a little bit more blood, I guess, a little bit, and there's parts of torture kind of shown in that one. But yeah, it's not too far outside of what we see now. That
have you watched 24, the TV series, for example?
Yeah, here and there. Didn't watch all of
them. I'm just trying to think of just normal, like, what's not on cable TV, but what I call network television. So the amount of blood and violence and torture scenes just in that great TV series, by the way, but it's just, I mean, it's like there's this Rambo 2 and 3 is actually quite quaint. And that, I think that's why partly Rambo, like the fourth film, probably amped it up a bit. I think that was obviously intentional. I think that was Sly's way of saying this is no longer the 80s cheese type film. We're now 2008.
It was a lot. And that movie's like 80 minutes. It's just like a nonstop gore fest for that entire time. I don't think they could have made it longer because people would have passed out by then. I have
a fan description. Hey, you know what? I was going to save this for the Rambo 4 discussion. I'll be very quick because I don't want people to not listen to my fourth season of the show. But Rambo 4, as much as it's, I think it's kind of like loved by a lot of Rambo fans because they think because of the amped up violence, that's not necessarily for me, Ryan, a thing that I need to be gravitated towards because, you know, First Blood, for example, it has some very, you know, dark, crazy moments, but it's not quote unquote like a gore fest, right? It's just a tense, strong drama. For Rambo 4, I did love the, a lot of people turning to ground beef moments. That was kind of fun to watch. I agree. But here's my fan description. I wanted that film, A, to be longer. I thought it was incredibly too short. I thought it was actually almost comically too short. I was like, whoa, we have a whole third act here that's missing.
Right.
And that third act, to me personally, so everything that happened in the film, fine, just keep it as it is. They should have just tacked on another 20 minutes, make it an hour and 25 or an hour and 35 minute film, 40 minute film, and have the last 20 minutes of him going into the camp stealth style, killing stealth that kind of way, like one-man army into the base. So yeah, he took care of the guys with the big 50 cal. But if you think about it, that 50 cal scene, as cool as it was, should not have been a finale. It should have been the closing of the third act type thing, and then the fourth act or final act should have been him one-on-one with the boss level type fights, like hand-to-hand.
Sure.
Imagine like the Ryan before ending with a hand-to-hand fight with him just ripping out the guy's throat or something with his bare hands. I think that would have been,
right.
That's my fan description, a very brief overview.
Sure. We saw like the bare hand fighting in Last Blood where he tears that guy's heart out.
I love that. Yeah.
The most famous thing to come from Rambo 4 is the meme that it removes the gun of Stallone's hands and he's given the thumbs up. That's great.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I remember watching that trailer for the first time when Sly or the company released, of course, the unrated trailer and the scene, of course, of him turning that guy into the Jeep into a ground beef. We'd never seen anything like that. I think that was to indicate, guys, this is a different Rambo film. This is a 2008 Rambo film. So I love all the films for different reasons, but every film I've had something that I would change. My own, you know, we all do it. we all do our own fanscription, right? We all do our own, like, oh, had I been in charge, I would have done X, Y, Z.
Right. What if this happened? Yeah.
Okay. So where we last left off. So we just finished the sequence of Ramble in the mud feces pit, and he was hanging up. Great sequence there of Sly, the actor, of course, kind of hanging on that bamboo or stick cross, and he's coming out of the mud. During that recording, I recorded with John Rivoli. Remember the sequence, of course, with the leeches on Sly's chest and arm? Now, I had thought for years, and assumed for years, that those looked real, because now, I've seen leeches in real life. I've had leeches on me in real life. And when they got the knife and they scraped them off, like, I don't know, that seems like a real legit makeup job, that they would have the blood on it just after they rip off the... So John Rivoli, who's friends with Sly in real life, they talk to each other quite frequently. I guess I can say this because he didn't say I couldn't. I asked John, don't do this for me. You're not doing this for Ryan, but do this for you, John, because he didn't know the answer. And I said, the next time you talk to Sly, just say, hey, I had a question about the leeches in Ramble Part 2. Were those real leeches on you, Sly? We finished our recording, and literally 10 minutes later, he sends me text. They were real. I just asked Sly.
Wow. I can't say I'm surprised, because, yeah, they're flicking those things off, and it looks very real. Impressive.
I think Sly doesn't get enough credit for his... I mean, his fans give him credit. I think outside the fandom, I think people... I wonder what Sly will be remembered for when all is said and done, when his life's over, and... maybe like 30 years from now when we're for sure that he's dead. Like, I don't know how long this guy's going to live. But let's say 30 years from now, we could pretty much ascertain he'll be dead in 30 years. So I wonder if people will remember just how much he put into the film as an action star. You know, with the first blood landing on the tree, he was the third guy in that stunt fall. That was him. He cracked his ribs. He had those real rats on him, leeches on him. You know, he breaks his neck doing Expendables. I mean, this guy... was doing it before Tom Cruise. You know, everyone, and rightfully so, compliments Tom Cruise with his physical acting and stunts. But Sly was doing it first.
Yeah. I mean, you always hear the story about how in Rocky IV, when he's hit from Dolph Lundgren, he has to go to the hospital because it moved his heart and all this stuff. He's constantly getting hurt on his movies. So, but he, you know, he's very dedicated to his craft and wants things to look as real as possible. So, I mean, I hope people do remember that. It's going to be Rocky that is going to be the everlasting character and legacy that he has. But I hope people do remember the action stuff that he did, but not the stuff like Stop or My Mom Will Shoot or Rhinestone or, you know, like, I hope it's Rambo, maybe the Expendables that people will recall, those gritty action films.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of what he'd be remembered for, I find it interesting. Of course, Sly is very active on his Instagram. His profile picture of Instagram is actually Ramble.
Oh, there you go.
The Ramble character. So, you know, he's choosing the profile picture. So it's interesting that he chose the Ramble character as the profile picture.
Right. Doesn't he have a statue at his house of Rambo?
Well, he did in Florida, but my understanding is Adele, the singing pop star there, Adele bought his mansion in Florida from Sly about a few months ago, 3 to 6 months ago. Anyways, the statue, last I heard, was there when Sly left the house. Now, whether he took the statue with him later, I don't know. But either Adele has the statue or yeah, so...
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so...
Adele might have a Ramble statue.
Yeah. No, the Rocky one, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Oh, Rocky.
The Ramble statue?
He has a Ramble statue at his house, doesn't he? Or he did at one point.
Oh, Ramble. I know the Rocky one. He had one of the replicas from the... it's actually not a replica. It's the exact same, like, whatever's at the steps in Philly. He had it in his Florida home. Yeah.
I could have sworn I saw some Rambo statue, like a bronze statue in his backyard or something once.
Maybe. There is a wooden one in Hope, British Columbia, where First Blood was filmed. There is a wooden one, which I'm going to visit probably 2024.
Cool.
Yeah, because I'm actually, if this matters, but I'm moving to Alberta, which is east of where I'm living now, and I have to drive through Hope, British Columbia to go there for my military posting. So we're going to make a stop, of course, in Hope, British Columbia in 2024. Cool. And I'll probably on season 4 or 5, or maybe done this series. I don't know. By then, I'll get a picture anyways with the Ramble wooden statue.
Great. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait. Okay. Yeah, that was the sequence we just saw. And so the Russian soldier, of course, has landed. Ramble's about to be brought in for some further interrogation here. Of course, that Vietnamese or Vietcong soldier or whatever captain that's in this group that we know his end that he meets later. But I mentioned this in the previous episode, but you might find this interesting. In the book written by David Morrell, and I didn't mention this in the last episode, but David Morrell, he wrote, of course, a novelization for part two, even though the character, not really a spoiler anymore, the character in his first book dies. And he started the second book with the foreword by the author. It said, in my book, First Blood, Rambo dies. In the films, he lives. And that's just how he addresses that concept. So, and yeah, that's the easiest way to approach that.
Right.
This captain guy, just a little, people can take it for what it's worth. He is actually the same guy that, remember the scene of First Blood where he chops his chest up and tortures him?
Well, yeah. Oh, they're saying it's the same dude.
Yeah. So David Morrell wants the readers to think it's the same. He makes it, and this is kind of a B plot or C plot in the book, that it's the same guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting connection.
Yeah. And what David Morrell used, he used three different things to make that book. He used the original shooting script, which we see on screen, James Cameron's original script, and David Morrell's authorship to combine the two and create some sub-stories and backstories about the character and stuff. We get more stuff from Rambo's life as younger and all that stuff. It's very interesting. So I can't recommend highly enough Rambo fans. If you're a Rambo fan, you kind of want to geek out and get some, you know, again, fanscription. You want to get some, like, official fanscription from the creator of Rambo. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I got to check that out. I'm disappointed you didn't go back to Fu Manchu, though. Should have brought that back for this.
Yeah, that's right. Fu Manchu was awesome. In the book, it's very clear in the book that this POW camp was the same camp that Rambo was in this.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So it's directly the same place he was at before.
That's right. So it's the same captain or the same whatever leader of the troop. And it's mentioned, why is he still here? And Rambo assumes that maybe this guy is just a piece of crap anyways, and he can't get promoted or posted out of this unit. So that's why he's still there. It's like specifically said that this is the same camp. However, it is mentioned in the film. When you go back to the first scene when Troutman's talking to Rambo through the chain link fence, it is briefly and quickly mentioned, but it's never talked about again, so it's very easy for everyone to forget. Troutman says something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing here, like, the reason why you've been hired to go back to this camp is because you know it best because you were there, type thing.
Okay.
I know, it's so, like, you know, that's how he was able to navigate the camp the way he did and the ins and outs, but they never, it's oddly edited. You can easily put in that idea that this is where he got out of before because he just navigates it so well, but it's never really fleshed out in the film, so the casual film goer won't even connect that Rambo knows this camp because this is where he was before.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's all. Thank you, Captain Vin. Leave one guard, please. I see you are no stranger to pain. Perhaps you have been among my Vietnamese comrades before. No answer.
So I like that look right there that Sly gives. So again, you know, when you break this down scene by scene, there's a lot going on here. He actually says that it looks like you've been, you're no stranger to pain because, you know, he's being choked and punched. He's not barely making any sounds or reacting. He goes, it looks like you've been around these guys before. And then Rambo looks at him like, damn straight I have.
Yeah, right. The Rambo glare is an intense one, for sure.
And this actor, his name, I mentioned before in the last episode, but let me get it again. Yeah, Steven Berkoff. So he's like 80-something now. He's still alive. He still acts on stage. I reached out to him on his Instagram. That's all I could find. And I don't think these celebrity guys ever look at their Instagram messages. If you're not a friend of theirs or if they don't follow you, they won't see your request. But I would love to talk to him because I think he did a great job in this film.
Oh, for sure. I've seen him before in some other movies, too, but I can't place his face into what films.
Well, you might recognize him from Octopussy.
Oh, okay, okay.
Clockwork Orange.
All right, there you go.
Beverly Hills Cop.
All right, I knew he had a familiar face.
Yeah,
all right.
He's one of those, he's just one of those actors who just typecast himself as the Russian. Great role or great typecasting for an 80s. You could spend a whole decade and a half playing the bad Russian guys. Hey, speaking of Russians, they're the bad guys again, so he can do it again for me.
I know, it's all come back around. When I was watching this yesterday, I was like, well, some things never change again.
No, they don't. So true and terrible at the same time. Now, the big bodyguard in the back, John gave a great story about, his name is Voslav Govederka.
All right.
He was born in Gacko Bosnia in 1940. He's the big dude. Well, he was a bodyguard type individual. And guess who discovered him? Want to have any guesses who discovered this big bodyguard?
Stallone.
Did he almost put him in Rocky V? Almost the next guy?
I just love it. Like, Stallone discovered Dolph, discovered Mr. T, brought in Hulk Hogan. Right. He loves these big meathead guys. I love it. So anyways, so again, if you haven't, for some reason, if you're listening to this episode, which is very possible because you're a fan of Walter and his work, I would recommend at the very least go back to episode, five, and listen to the great story that John gives about this actor. And he was with Sly when Voyo Gorick met Sly and John randomly in like LA or something. It was a very interesting little story. Yeah.
Well,
do you wish to give your name? Now, what possible harm can that cause? Pride is a poor substitute for intelligence. What you must understand is that we have to interrogate you. To Sergeant Yushin here, you are a piece of meat, a laboratory experiment. But to me, you are a comrade, similar to myself. Just opposed by an act of fate.
It's all great dialogue there.
Yeah, for sure. I remember very clearly the heating up the knife thing, too. He just leaves it there for a long time.
Yeah, it's a great foreshadow. You know, he's just casually walking around with the knife. Of course, Rambo's looking at it, and he puts it in the barbecue grill or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, we're like, wonder what's going to happen here. Basically, this is good cop, bad cop. He's saying, hey, look, you're a comrade. You're just, you know, it's just fate that I was born in Russia, you were born in the States. And this is actually very true in its own way, that soldiers rarely have a beef with whatever country they're told to fight. So, oh, I guess we're fighting the Russians. I guess we're fighting the Vietnamese. I guess we don't like Vietnamese people. The average 20-year-old kid doesn't have a beef with another country.
Right.
What team were you born on? It's really kind of crazy. I don't get all political, but really at the end of the day, war, and I'm a military person myself, so I get it. Like, I'm in the Navy, and if I'm assigned to go on a ship that's going to go to battle against whatever country, okay, I guess they're the enemy. I don't want to be enemy to anybody, but I guess that's what we've signed up to do, yeah.
Right. I mean, like, his dedication to his country is still a big deal. I mean, the last few lines of the movie are him talking about, I'd die for America, basically, when Trautman confronts him with that.
Yeah.
And he has the big line at the end about, you know, that he wishes that America loved the Vietnam vets as much as they loved their own country. So, I mean, he's a patriot, and we could say that. We don't ever see him treated well by the U.S., like, at all. But no. He does love his country.
Absolutely. Yeah, he does. And it's a great ending too. Doesn't cry as much in part two as he did in part one. Yeah.
Right.
too manly to cry in part two.
Uh-huh.
They got tea going here at the same time as they're cooking the knife.
Russian tea. That's the best.
I know you are trying to facilitate the release of war criminals held by this republic. I can appreciate this. But this incident, your capture, is embarrassing.
It's total Bondulan stuff here too, so that totally fits with his role in Octopussy.
Yeah, no kidding. I love how he says his capture is embarrassing. He refers to the POWs as criminals, as war criminals. Again, depends what side you're on, right?
Mm-hmm.
True.
So now he wants to know, why are you here? We have to have an explanation. What brought you to this place? Of course, Rambo's easy lines for Sly to memorize. He's got nothing to say here. A lot of physical acting.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I wish you to radio your headquarters and say that you have been captured and condemned for espionage activities, and that no such criminal aggression should be attempted in the future, or they will meet with the same fate as yours.
Is that the only time we've heard Rambo say that in the series?
He says it in Rambo 3, he says it to Trautman when they're in the trench, when they got the whole army, the Russian army on them, and he goes, F them, or whatever it was, when they come in on Rambo and Trautman. But that's
right.
I don't think he curses again that I can remember. Yeah, I don't know why. I always find it weird when Stallone does curse. I don't know why that is. He does do it, but it's kind of like Clint Eastwood. You don't hear Clint Eastwood do it all that much, but he does it.
Right. Most of the time with Rambo, he just gives you like a death stare to have him actually say, F you. It's like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah.
More serious now.
Look at the face now of...
He's pissed.
Yeah.
You wish to test your strength. Good. Good.
That's great. You wish to test your strength. What a great response. I mean, this guy plays the villain perfectly, cast perfectly. You know, he's been told to screw off, and he's like, oh, all right, we're going to have some fun here. You want to see how much pain you can take.
Yeah, he's got the back and forth really well. His responses are great. You can see it in his face, especially with, you know, it being in Vietnam and everything, like all the sweat and everything. It just makes him seem so slimy visually. The line delivery is great.
Now, I know this is obviously a movie, but we know torture happens, not to get all sad or anything, but I just don't get how I couldn't do it. Even if I knew someone was an enemy, I don't know how much I could. Could you torture someone? I guess you got to be.
No.
Could you, Walter?
I don't think I could, unless you don't like my videos, then they could be tortured. But
yeah, I think people are tortured by listening to my show, so that's probably enough. So maybe I am torturing people. Yeah.
It's the opposite. This is pleasurable activity.
Oh, okay. All right. I appreciate that.
I mean, it's intense stuff, especially when we get to that. I don't know if we're going to get to
that
episode here, but him, when he's just strapped up there, I guess we'll talk about it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I love that.
Lucian.
He comes in. Now, we're hearing now a little moped coming up. Of course, we knew earlier that Ko and Rambo saw earlier in the film that the whore from the village, I love how she calls her, the whore from the village came in, and now she's going to disguise herself as the whore from the village to come in and give the soldiers happy time, so that's how she comes up to the gate and gets let in. Mm-hmm. I should note, in the book, they do flesh out Rambo and Ko's, I would say, emotional relationship.
It's so ridiculous how they have like two scenes together. They kiss once and then she's immediately like turned into Swiss cheese.
I love it.
Like right after. It's almost comical. And he's so affected by it. Yeah, I mean, he would be affected by it, I think, but we didn't get to see their relationship get fleshed out. So that's interesting to hear that it is in the book.
Yeah. It's still short in the book because the timeline is the same, but they definitely have a connection, and they talk more and connect more regarding their hopes and dreams type thing and what have you.
They could have stood to put a few more minutes of that in this movie. This movie's like an hour 35. They could have put 5 more minutes to establish their relationship.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught this on one of my Twitters. I said that according to David Morrell, the creator of the character, he did Rambo dirty. He made him a virgin. He's still a virgin in this film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because when he went to Vietnam, he was steady with his high school sweetheart, and he went to Vietnam out of high school. He never finished. And when he came back from Vietnam, she married. And so he just never found love again after that. And then the rest is history, yeah.
Right. Now, that's interesting.
Of course, the Sly character or the Sly actor is older by 10 years than the Rambo character in the books, but still,
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Bye.
Em đi đâu vậy?
Chốt tâm em bác trai. Em vào giận thằng xí.
Anh tối này à? Anh đi nói đi. Nó tính rẻ lắm đó mày.
I really wish I knew what they're saying, because they are speaking Vietnamese. Something probably, I don't know, we could guess. I don't know.
It is interesting that they don't have subtitles for most of the Vietnamese dialogue in this.
Yeah, and especially when Rambo and Ko were speaking. Again, in the book, David Morrell gives you the English. He just translates it for you, what they said, and I forget exactly. I can't recommend part two enough. It's a great read. It just fleshes out this movie so much more, and it gives you more of an appreciation for the film because you put in what David Morrell wants the characters thinking. You watch that in the film. Yeah, anyway, so I'm listening to the audiobook. I listen to the audiobooks in my car. And the author, I guess it's allowed, I'm not sure, but he talks with a Vietnamese accent when he gets to the Vietnamese characters. I don't know if that's allowed. I don't.
Oh, well.
It's just interesting to hear. He goes, he's a Caucasian guy. He sounds Caucasian. I don't know what it's, but you know, you can kind of tell when someone just talks, maybe.
Right.
He doesn't sound Irish. He doesn't sound Australian. But when he goes to the Vietnamese characters, he
full on does it, huh?
Yeah.
Well. I'm sure that was recorded a little while ago, but still, it is,
it's interesting. I don't know. Is that allowed? I don't know if it's allowed.
I personally wouldn't have a problem with that, but no. I'm not Vietnamese, so like,
no,
it's,
I don't care.
Know.
It's just weird because that's just how they sound. So it's weird. We get so wrapped up in this. I don't even know what's allowed anymore, but I'm not offended. But I remember thinking, I guess we're allowed to do that. Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I love the pose. Can we just talk about he's literally in like the muscle pose up here like the to be tortured. And I remember Stallone in the Rocky IV recut documentary talking about some of those shots were all vanity of him. I was like, yeah, that makes total sense because this is so ridiculous. He's being tortured and it's terrible, but he is just flexing the entire time.
No,
this is the big body shot for Stallone. Yeah. It's hilarious from like a behind the scenes perspective to see it. I mean, it's terrible that Ram was being tortured and all this stuff, but it's just like, I mean, they pulled no punches with like, I got to show off every single muscle in my upper body here. Everything.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I don't have much more to add to that. Then when you're seeing this as a kid, you're not thinking, didn't notice it when I was younger, but of course rewatching like you in our adult years, because now we're starting to think about how this film was made. So of course Sly's like, okay, I got an idea. Look, they're going to torture me for some information. And then they're like, well, why don't we just waterboard you? No, waterboard you. That's I agree. That's really brutal. Like, well, why don't we, break some fingers? Yeah. We'll break some. No. How about my shirt comes off? Hear me out. My shirt comes off. Okay. I'm put onto this like steel bed frame thingamajig against the wall. Okay. But I'll be standing, right? I want to be standing. And they got me hooked up to this. The electricity goes through your body. All the same, your arms don't have to be up this way. They could be tied behind your back, and the electricity is still.
He had to go up. I mean, and when he gets tortured and gets electrocuted, I mean, he's flexing everything. It's just like, it is so ridiculous looking at that from that perspective. But I mean, this is like Stallone at his most in shape, right? I mean, this is Rocky IV time, so he's in great shape. Also, you know, rewatching this yesterday, when he walks, he does that saunter. I was like, oh, that's the Rocky IV saunter. I don't know if it's because he's got more muscle on him than usual, but how he walks, I mean, I just think of him walking up to Drago and for the fight at the end of the film. It's like the same kind of pace.
He has every right to be proud of what he's done with his body. He's got he's got every right. He looks great. And he did the right thing. He's got this on celluloid forever. It's forever captured on film. This was me back in my 40, 41 years old. This is how I looked, and the rest of you can suck it.
Was he 40? Oh, man.
Yeah, well, he's 76 now, and this came out 37 years ago. What's the math on that?
Right, 85, sure.
Yeah.
Good on him, man.
Yeah, good on him. Looks good. I'm 46, and I don't look like that.
I'm 33. I'd have never looked anything like that.
But here's the beauty of us being just normal. This is what I always say about being normal. Like, I like to eat well, and I do jog, and I like to be healthy, but without worrying about the big muscle math or physique type stuff, is I don't have to worry about losing it. I don't have to worry about the maintaining, because once you have it, then it's like, okay, now, because at some point you either stop or you're doing this till you die. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'll just stay healthy. You know, healthy diet, healthy run. I don't need to be, you know, have the six pack and biceps, because then you're, then you have to do it forever.
Right. Yeah, I think your way is the way to go.
I think so. But, of course, he's worth $500 million.
Right. I mean, he's got to look good. So, I mean, again, looks good. It's just a ridiculous scene to see now.
Look at that cord, the cords in his biceps. What is it?
I know. Holy moly. I don't think I've ever seen that kind of – like, he has muscles on top of his muscles. He's a big dude.
Corded veins or whatever that is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah.
So I do love how they're electrocuting them, and I love the subtle, they're drawing energy from the village, that they're pounding so much electricity in them that it's actually dimming the lights throughout the village.
Yeah, that's a good couple shots, way to build up like how much he's really being hurt.
Comrade, here is something that might be of interest to you. A transcript of the conversation between your helicopter pilot and his commander. We intercepted.
This is very good, too, because you can assume, and this, again, I'm in the Navy, and we always operate under the assumption that everything we say and do has been intercepted. You kind of have to. Especially with today's technology. Mm-hmm. So you do your best with code words, which, you know, he does his code words, and he even says, well, that's a clever nickname for home base or whatever. They know the code words, and they have them too. You do your best with what you can, but I love how he's now going to read to Rambo, try to give him cognitive dissonance here, saying, hey, the people that you're protecting don't care about you. You know, how do you like how right. do you like them apples?
It is a valid point. I mean, Charles Napier has just totally left him there, and we see what happens. But yeah, I mean, like, he's making good points here. I mean, the United States has never really shown Rambo any love at all. I mean, like, he's gone through all these problems coming back home from Vietnam and now being involved in this. I mean, it's just history repeating itself here. So I'm not saying he would ever join the other side, but the U.S. has not shown Rambo any love.
And to be clear, he's not doing this for his country right now. He's doing this for the guys in the camp. That's
right. To get them out, to get them home. True.
Because he knows what they're going through. Because he knows, he said in the book he was there for 6 months or 6 weeks. I can't remember, but not a long time. And these guys have been here for years. So he knows the pain and suffering they're going through.
Right. That one line where the guy asks what year it is and says it's 1985. And that look, just that, like, oh my God, what? Yeah. He's been there for that long. That was some great acting by that guy. I don't know his name, but like just those facial expressions. I mean, he really played up, you know, the POW type very well.
I wonder who got those roles. Like, hey, we need to hire like five or six guys who don't eat food.
Right.
There's some skinny actors.
Some really skinny guys. We'll bring them in. Be really authentic. Just got to dirty up their teeth.
Dragonfly Wolf Den. Colorful names. Here we are. We have them in sight. And the reply, abort the operation immediately. This is a recall. Confirmed. Over. It seems you were abandoned on direct command. And these are the people you protect with your pain.
That's a great line. These are the people you protect with your pain. I like that line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's doing great here.
I love the good old-fashioned bad guys in these films. We don't have enough of these anymore. I think the Mission Impossible films do a good job of keeping that up. Even the James Bond films. We don't have enough of other films giving us these classic bad guys.
I understand the point of trying to humanize your villain, because a lot of the times that could make for a more interesting character overall and a more interesting story. But once in a while, you just need a good bad guy who's bad just because he's bad. And you got to get a really good actor in there to read those lines and portray that character. But we don't get that a lot nowadays.
Increase the voltage, I think he said in Russian.
Scream. There is no shame.
So he's told Yushin to increase the voltage on the electricity. What I love here, he says, I give you permission to scream. There's no shame in that. What I really kind of like, one, it shows this guy, Rambo, has not shown any real indication. He's any, like, he doesn't, you know, I step on a piece of Lego and I curse to high heaven. You know, this guy.
I think even Rambo would scream stepping on a Lego.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, maybe Lego was the best example. But, you know, but he's getting this voltage stream, but he's going to get a lot more now. And what I love is that Rambo does scream, which indicates to us, the audience, how much pain he's actually in now. If Rambo is truly screaming in pain, can you imagine what you and I would, you know, be experiencing? Because he's been taught to ignore pain.
Yeah, can't ignore this, though. I like, was it in First Blood where they asked him if that's working? Or it's in one of the Rambo movies, and he says, like, not really.
That's right. What was that? Okay, maybe somebody
just in three.
Maybe.
I can't remember if that was in one or three, but they ask him, like, oh, we're taught to ignore pain. He's like, is it working? He says, not really.
Oh, that's right. It must be part three. Because part three was the Rambo 3, the comedy. So it had more of that.
Right. It probably was three.
Love that. The shots of the prisoners hearing the scream. Great flexing here.
Right. I mean, he's doing a great job at, I mean, it's not easy to look like you're in that much pain.
No.
And he's doing a great job. That non-verbal acting Stallone does so well.
He does an amazing job in this film again.
Strong. Very strong.
Even the Russian leader here recognizes, boy, you are strong, as he starts choking him a little bit.
Strong.
He says the strongest so far. Now we're going to see what's coming up. Like, he recognizes, okay, we can't get the information we need from this guy. So we can't hurt him as much as we need to. So we're going to have to think of something else here.
Strongest so far, but you're nearly dead. For what? Make the radio call.
No.
All right, of course, for our listeners who aren't seeing this on YouTube, Ko is just dispatched of a Viet Cong soldier, has taken his weapon, and she's going to set herself up to help Rambo escape because he's not expendable.
Right. I love the line. It's such a, foreshadow for real life events.
You got to wonder, when Sly created, because he created the Expendable series, I mean, and he wrote this film. Did he know
in 30 or 20 years, whatever, he was going to make an Expendables movie?
No, when he made the Expendables films, did he go like, oh yeah, I wrote that?
I highly doubt it, because it seems like he doesn't remember continuity or anything he does in other films anyway. I mean, the Rocky franchise is the perfect example of that. So I'm going to say no. He just likes the word expendable.
Donald said that he likes the – what does headcanon mean anyways when someone says headcanon?
Headcanon is just like what you think is happening on screen. So if you want to imagine like something else happened, like I'm going to ignore what happened in the movie. I'm going to think it happened this way. That's headcanon.
Okay, so he says he likes the headcanon, thank you, that the other POWs were Rambo's friends in the cartoon.
I never saw the cartoon. I've seen like little clips here and there, but it's crazy that they made a cartoon series out of Rambo.
No. No, we're not going to. I'm not reviewing that. Maybe
you're not going to review it?
Well, maybe for a bonus episode, I'll do something stupid and I'll do like the first episode or something. I can't, but maybe. When the series is over, give me something to do, a bonus episode of some sort. Yeah.
Sure.
All right, so now they've brought in his friend.
Talk to obey would be so much easier. Yashin!
Classic bad guy stuff, hurting the other people.
Yep. Well, it's actually effective, really, because it's one thing for you to feel pain, but when your lack of talking is going to affect somebody else's pain. The whole reason why he's here is to help these guys. They've already been through enough, is what he's thinking too. Like, these guys, now they're going to get injured or hurt because I'm here.
And the knife's coming back into play. Here we go.
Yashin has a memento for you of this occasion.
So, yeah, Yashin's holding the knife, and the tip is, it's so hot that it's like white gold hot. That's actually, I don't know how they did that effect. I don't know if it was really heat on it or what, but it's a really cool effect. This is 85, so I don't know what they used on the end of that blade to make it look like it was on fire.
They could have just really heated it up, maybe.
it could be as simple as that it's just that hot, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, this scene here. Again, watch this practical effect. So again, 85, no CGI. They've got the knife point on Sly's face, or Rambo's face, of course, in the film, but the actor, Sly, has got this point, and it does leave a crease on his skin. I'm just watching and trying to figure out how they did this practically. I'm just, obviously, Sly, don't at me that you had a real hot knife on your cheek. Okay, some things we just know, you did not cut your skin.
I really scarred my face for this film.
Maybe I'll have John ask Sly, was that a real hot knife? Okay, if that comes back with a yes, I'm not going to believe anything Sly says anymore. So I'm not going to ask, because I don't want to hear the answer.
Sure. It's a great effect, and they got smoke coming out of it. It's awesome. So you could see, like, right before that the knife goes into his face, that there's a little line there. It's like where you're supposed to cut, kind of. I was almost thinking, speaking of headcanon, maybe that was like an old scar that they literally reopened. That would be kind of cool, because the whole movie is him going back to Vietnam. So that would be like a cool thing to expound upon, but... it looks great. I mean, like, there's literally smoke coming out of the quote-unquote wound or the makeup.
Well said. To add to that, what you just said, headcanon. Like, boy, I learned something new today. Headcanon. Look at his face here where he almost looks, well, he looks traumatized. Like, it hurt him to be cut, but he almost looks like he's there again. He's being cut up again.
Right.
It looks like, oh, I'm here again. He looks, I wouldn't say defeated, but almost, because in the book he talks about how they don't think about being where they are, that they put themselves in other places. So right here, he's just... He's somewhere else, almost.
Right.
Put it in his eye.
You like that look back? Put it in his eye. Huh?
Huh? Whose eye? This guy?
Your eye means nothing to you, then perhaps his does. Don't tell them anything. You will talk.
They got that close to his eye. That blade is right by his eye.
So I don't know what they're using to make it light up like that. So maybe it's just a plastic part of the blade, and they got a little light in there.
It's got to be just lit up somehow. I don't think they'd put that hot of a knife, right, or a knife in general, close to someone's eye like that.
But great effect.
But then again, it was the 80s. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Sly's like, man, if you lose an eye, you lose an eye, man. It's part of the game when you're in a Rambo film.
Hey, you can live forever. I'm celluloid.
Celluloid forever. Great.
What you not a show?
So Rambo agrees that he'll talk. The Russian commander's all excited. I love how they throw the poor guy down and they just kick him for good measure.
That guy's just been through so much. Years and years of torture. It's crazy.
Now the that the music changed, and of course they're showing Ko going through the village. She's scouting out where to find Rambo.
Jerry Goldsmith came back for this one, right?
That's right, yeah. He was this one, great. And part three.
He was a great composer, one of the greats. Right, that was one of the shots I was talking about. Like, they really pull out some really cool ways to showcase things there. And just the lightning strike showing the Viet Cong soldier right there. It was great. I love how they did that.
That was really well done.
Don't do it.
So the POW says, okay, don't do it, because they put Rambo in front of the mic. He's like, don't do it.
Stomped for his trouble there.
Yeah, he gets stomped.
Speaking of those good shots, I mean, that's one of my favorites. Another one was when Rambo was underneath one of those cabins or whatever you want to call them. And I think it's when one of the guys was with one of the prostitutes, and like the camera goes over them and you see Rambo's eyes between the cracks. Love that shot as well.
That's a great shot. Yeah, I agreed. And that was it's the same captain that he, in the book, when he saw that guy, he recognized him as the same one that tortured him.
Hey, gotcha.
Yeah.
Do it now.
Podolsky, that's his name. Podolsky. Yeah, that's right. Of course, I love how we're hearing the thunder crash, the lightning, the tensions rising, the storms coming.
Yeah. It builds up to a great moment.
Yeah. The time is perfect. I wonder if Rambo said afterwards, was that cool, you know, when I held the mic and the lightning crashed at the same time? In fact, it actually happened in one of my favorite films I've mentioned before in the show, Tombstone. It's one of my favorite films. With the part where Wyatt Earp is like, you tell him I'm coming, and Al's coming with me. Yeah.
Yes.
And the thunder crashes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Send us a message, people, where great thunder crashes help sell a scene. Yeah. Now she's looking through the floorboards.
Right. Another callback shot, I guess.
22056. Lone Wolf, receive. This is Lone Wolf. 22056.
Lone Wolf, this is Wolfden. Transmit location and status. Over.
What is it, Wolf?
It's Rambo, sir.
Receive. Over.
We read you, Lone Wolf.
Is it just me? Whenever I see Charles Napier, I think of the good old boys from the Blues Brothers. That's the first thing my head always goes to.
Oh, that's funny. I'm not familiar enough with the film to know the reference, but I know the film, but not the character. Yeah, okay. I'll have to Google that afterwards. What's
sure,
his name?
Blues Brothers, one of my favorite. Charles Napier?
The character that references.
Oh, the character. I can't remember his first name, but he's like the leader of the good old boys band that the Blues Brothers impersonates at Bob's Country Bunker, and then they meet at the end. It's pretty great.
Okay. Oh, boy, I haven't seen that in a long time.
Blues Brothers, I mean, I'm from like the Chicago area, so Blues Brothers is like the Bible over here almost in visual form. In a lot of ways.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Of course, now Murdoch, Charles Napier plays Murdoch. He's like, cool, we're getting a call from Rambo. That's
right.
Great.
He's like, oh, he's alive, I guess. Dang it.
Position, over.
I say again, what is your position? Over.
Your friend dies if you do not answer.
Johnny, this is Troppin. Where the hell are you?
I love that. So he's not answering. They're asking, where are you and what have you? And Troutman goes, come on, Rambo, where are you, man? And I love the big Russian guy, you know, pulls his head back and the other guy says,
right. Yeah. Like my family is also, I'm half Italian. So like we all love Stallone, love the Rocky movies. My uncles were huge Rocky fans and they also loved Rambo. They always quote Troutman saying, Johnny, Johnny, like all the time. So whenever I hear that, I instantly think of my uncle saying, Johnny.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah, the Italians, they love Rocky, don't they? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we love Rocky.
That's awesome.
John, come in.
He's torn here, right? He recognizes, like, you know, if I don't say
anything.
Yeah,
he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, he's torn because they don't know his predicament. He's got his POW friend who's going to die, apparently, if he doesn't say anything. But he also recognizes, I've got Troutman asking me to come in. This is his father. Like, and they make that very clear in the book, David Morrell, that Troutman is the father that he never had. He is his only family, he's the only person he trusts, the only person that he cares about. Now Troutman's asking, John, talk to me. If you heard that little click, click, click sound, and people on iTunes, what have you, that's, of course, when Rambo grabs the mic stand. And we all love that moment because he you can hear the knuckles cracking.
And all this.
Yeah,
you could hear like every little sound effect in his arm and everything in this.
I love that. Nobody's ever grabbed a microphone like that before. We just
go.
Murdoch. He's here.
I love that. He goes, hey, yeah. Can I talk to Murdoch, please?
Right. Right. I love the reaction. Murdoch's like, huh?
Yeah. And then, of course, he's going to play it off. Hey, Rambo, I'm glad you're okay. We'll come get you.
Yeah, right. We'll come pick you up.
Rambo, this is Murdoch. We're glad you're alive. Where are you?
That grin.
Give us your position and we'll come to pick you up.
Here we go.
Murdoch. I'm coming to get you.
All right.
Love it. What a great moment. What a great moment.
It
just
is fantastic.
Knuckles cracking, forearms flexing, the mic like crushed. He's like crushing the microphone in his hand. That's one of the most intimidating Stallone moments, I think, in his whole career.
Yeah.
Murdoch coming to get you. It's
great. Now we're finally – we've gotten to this – like there's only 35 minutes left to film. Through the whole First Blood film, we never saw Rambo quite unleashed. He was on a leash. He was kind of constricted by, of course, by the script, but he didn't want to kill fellow National Guardsmen. He didn't want to kill citizens in the films anyways, in the film version of Rambo. He didn't want to do that. Here, he was sent on a mission to take pictures. He gets captured. He's killed a couple of guys to get a prisoner W. Like, he's still kind of within this constraint of the rules, the orders. But this moment is now a combination of everything. He's finally unleashed. He's got no more orders. He's got no more pickup point times. He's now able to just do what he wants, how he wants, to get out of this situation. This also reminds me of this moment where he grabs the microphone and says, Murdoch, I've come. I remember seeing this as a kid thinking, yeah! And this reminds me of the Rocky II moment when Adrian says, win.
Oh, sure. Great moment.
It reminds me of that same thing of...
Like, it's about to get real here. Like, I love that they cut to Murdoch, too, for a second. He's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Looks like he just pissed himself a little bit.
He's scared. Absolutely. I want to keep going.
We got to stop. I understand.
Well, I know. I mean, this is so much fun. But I think the next sequence, of course, of them escaping, probably, if I'm just looking at it right now, we'll probably end the next episode with possibly the Co's demise. I don't want to spoil anything. Because I can't imagine anyone's listening to this. But I can imagine if someone's listening to this podcast who's never seen the films.
I mean, you should go watch the Rambo movies before you listen to that.
I would recommend watching the Rambo film.
Or at least follow along. It's fun to, if you want to do that way, that's also fun.
First and foremost, thank you so much for coming on, spending some of your hard-earned time off between all your projects with a ham and egger like me to do this.
From one ham and egger to another, thank you for having me on.
Oh, very kind. Very kind, Walter. And I would love to have you on again if you're willing to come on a future season.
Oh, absolutely. If you guys ever need a substitute for a Rocky podcast for one more round, anytime. You just let me know.
Well, those do happen. Our last two episodes, actually, we did Kyle couldn't make one and then Katie couldn't make it. So when that happens again, you'll be my first call for that. So thank you for that.
I'm so excited. Great. Okay.
So thank you so much, Walter, for coming on the show again. Your time was appreciated. Your thoughts and your commentary was awesome. Unfortunately, however, this episode is over.
Nothing is over. Nothing! You just don't turn it off.